Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Today on Truth and Movies, up first, it's a double will. Will Smith stalks himself in Ang Lee's 3D sci-fi thriller Gemini Man.
Why is it so hard for you to kill this man?
Then the legendary satirist Chris Morris returns with the FBI farce The Day Shall Come.
Perhaps your army needs weapons.
No, we don't believe in guns.
And in Film Club, the Manhattan upper class have their lives flipped turned upside down by the Fresh Prince in 6 Degrees of Separation.
A neighbor described the teacher as a nice boy. Always reading Catcher in the Rye.
Or coming up in Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Yes, hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here, sitting in the host chair, sitting across from Adam Woodward. It's been a while, Adam.
It has.
Where have you been?
I've been jetting off. I was in Japan for like 3 weeks, mm-hmm. just on holiday. Very nice. I managed to miss a lot of the hashtag discourse around certain films that were out recently. But yeah, lovely place. Mm-hmm. Feel very refreshed.
Oh,
ready to get stuck into these films.
Yes, welcome back. And welcome back too to Darren Richmond. It's been about a year, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, maybe a little bit more than a year.
Yeah.
I think the last time I was here we were doing The Equalizer 2, so yeah, I feel like good to be back.
How that film has endured in our minds.
Absolutely right, perhaps only mine.
But before we get to new releases, we do have a bit of follow-up from last week. We got a letter here from Nath saying, "Morning, Truth and Movies team. I put off listening to your podcast until I watched Joker over the weekend. Ever since watching an early trailer last year, it's been a highly anticipated film for me, mainly because of Joaquin Phoenix's back catalogue, which I love, from The Master, Inherent Vice, and You're Never Really Here. Three films that totally won me over, as well as Her, which showed his lighter, nerdy side. So you can imagine my disappointment with Joker. I can't actually tell you why I disliked it, as it has all the elements there on screen for me. A visually amazing backdrop, an outstanding leading man. I can't understand why it didn't gel for me. Lack of plot, lack of direction. An obvious outcome on the chat show, even the dialogue seemed forced and obvious. I wanted to like this film so much, but with every scene not really capturing me, I did start to question when it was going to pick up and start getting better in some form or another, but to no avail. Anyway, Nath, thank you so much for that email. We had all sorts of comments, didn't we, from listeners for that Joker episode last week. It's a divisive film. Adam, did you get to see the film?
Yeah, people were angry at us. I did see the film. I caught it quite late, but... I think my anticipation was definitely coloured by mm-hmm. some of the responses back and forth that have been going on, especially on film Twitter, as it's called. Yeah, this is a film for me that, I mean, pretty much all of the points that Nathan picks up on there I agree with, but I think there was a really good tweet I saw from Clarice Lowry, I believe, and she sort of said that in basic terms, when you have a film like this without the main character's foil being Batman, there's not really anywhere for you to go with the character.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of really needs that person to bounce off, that nemesis. And I think, yeah, you kind of flip that idea of like a superhero film is only as good as its villain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is kind of like the inverse of that. And I think this really suffers just fundamentally without having that tension and that conflict.
Darren, you're seeing this on Friday, so we need you to send us your comments to see whether it's going to be a full house of Little White Lies contributors here who haven't been so hot on the film.
I am intrigued. I mean, the one thing I found fascinating is quite a lot of the writing I've done in my life has been about football,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like the kind of tribalism that I see when people respond to articles about football, I've never quite seen it for a film the way it has been with this one.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it at great length last week. Do go back to the episode and see if you agree with us or don't. Many people haven't. There are some great reviews out there. Jessica Kiang wrote a fantastic review out of Venice about the film, and Robbie Collin as well. It's just clearly dividing people. But that's Joker. What else is going on in film world? Well, actually, we're right in the middle of the London Film Festival, aren't we, Adam? So we should talk about how that's going. Have you been to see much?
Yeah, I mean, so I got back just over a week ago, so I was sort of thrown straight into this. And it's actually one of those things where it's on your doorstep and mm-hmm. you somehow manage to miss it, just passes you yeah. by. I have been trying to get out to see things. I've been actually running around doing a few interviews as well, which has been really fun. Darren, I know you said you caught up with The Lighthouse recently.
Yeah, I saw The Lighthouse on Saturday night, which was quite an exhilarating experience. It was very exciting for me and my wife because we're massive fans of The Witch, and as we walked in, the sort of three main stars of The Witch, including Ralph Ineson, were there on the red carpet. So it was very sweet that they were going to support their old friend. Robert Eggers was there, Willem Dafoe was there, and it is well worth checking out, but it's not going to be out until January.
Yeah, it's taking a while to come out. It's coming out in the States very soon.
Yeah.
I saw that in Cannes. That was one of the best films I saw at Cannes, and I can't wait for the general populace to see it. It really is a ride.
The two comparisons I'd read going in were Steptoe and Son and There Will Be Blood. So I was very excited, and it didn't disappoint.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really been to see anything at the LFF this year. Adam, you're very, very right. It's quite hard sometimes when you're doing the day job, and even though it's on your doorstep and you could just go and wander out and see a film, it's quite hard to find time. What I have been doing this year, I've been doing more red carpets than ever as part of my day job at Film 4, and they had quite a crop of new filmmakers and veteran filmmakers presenting films. So we were on the red carpet for The Personal History of David Copperfield, Amanda Iannucci's film. We did Saint Maud, which is a kind of horror, dramatic horror debut from Rose Glass, quite hotly tipped, coming out of Toronto.
I've heard very mixed things on that, but it sounds one to watch, definitely.
Yeah, and then this coming Friday we're going for the red carpet for the new Sarah Gavron film Rocks, which is a London set coming of age film, completely street cast with loads of girls, really full of energy, and I'm sure that red carpet's going to be amazing. The girls have I think got the afternoon off school to go and tear up the red carpet. It should be quite fun. But I feel so out of the loop. I can't wait to see Knives Out. I can't wait to see Marriage Story. All these films people are lauding to the heavens, aren't
they? Yeah, I haven't seen Marriage Story. Knives Out is exceptional. Mm-hmm. It's one of those films that just is exactly what you want it to be, and you want it to start again as soon as the end credits start rolling. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to throw ahead to a couple of things. You say we're pretty much in the middle of the festival now, so it wraps up on Sunday, closing night gala being The Irishman, which is obviously the hot ticket. But there's quite a lot of other stuff in the programme that I think people might be interested in. Takashi Miike's First Love.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think we saw that together in Cannes.
I saw that in Cannes as well, yeah.
He makes a sort of couple of films every year or something like that. But this is feels like a real return to form for him. A bit of a flip on the Yakuza gangster genre. Mm-hmm. That's showing on Friday evening. I think there's still tickets available for that if people are interested. But definitely one for the genre fans to check out. Also, another Cannes hit was Zombie Child.
Yes.
Bertrand Bonello. Much more of a sort of cerebral, psychological drama. Really, really well acted. Didn't really recognise many of the cast. I think it's sort of up-and-coming young actors. But very sort of philosophical, and without being too kind of chin-strokey, but he makes these just wonderfully evocative films. That's also on Friday, I think, during the day. Deerskin.
I remember that one.
Did you see
Cannes as well? Yeah, that was the opening night at Director's Fortnight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's showing here on Friday and Sunday, and there's still tickets going for that. These are all mostly in the West End.
That's directed by Mr. Wazzo.
Flat Eric himself. It's really actually quite good. I saw one of his films. Again, he's made quite a few films that I think have mostly received distribution in France, and he made a film called Rubber a few years ago, which is, as a kind of proof of concept, it's fine, but fleshed out into a feature, it's a little like, not sure this really goes anywhere. But this new one, it's got Jean Dujardin in it and Adèle Haenel. It's basically about a guy who is obsessed with this deerskin jacket and basically goes on this crusade to make sure that his is the only jacket in the world. It's very comedic, but it takes quite a sinister turn that I would definitely recommend. Quite fun farce. There's some other stuff. Give Me Liberty, have you heard of that?
I've not seen it. No, what's that one?
It's quite kind of bleak. The director, Kirill Mikhanovsky, I think he's a Russian or Ukrainian, but it's set in sort of blue-collar, working-class America and deals with sort of themes of race and class and disability as well. So that's been touted as again, one to watch. A little bit more under the radar. So if you missed out on tickets to something like The Irishman, I'd definitely recommend checking that out on Sunday.
And where can people get tickets for this, Adam?
Yeah, if you just go to bfi.org.uk/LFF. I just checked this morning. So at the time of recording, there's still quite a few tickets left for the films I've just mentioned. So, do go and check some out.
full slate of recommendations there. If you do go to the LFF, let us know what you think at the usual channels, Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or as always, the comments section at lwlies.com/podcast. But for those not in London, we have some new releases to talk about. Up first, Gemini Man. Will Smith stars as Henry Brogan, an elite assassin who is suddenly targeted and pursued by a mysterious young operative that seemingly can predict his every move, and who looks mysteriously just like him, albeit 30 years younger. Let's hear a clip from the trailer.
Tell me something. Why is it so hard for you to kill this man?
He knew every move of mine before I made it. I'd have him right there and take the shot.
I wanna be forever young.
And he'd be gone, like a ghost.
Do you really wanna live forever?
Who is he?
Do you really wanna live forever?
I think I know why he's as good as you. He is you.
A clip from the trailer for Gemini Man there. So, Adam, this is another chapter in Ang Lee's obsession to make high-def 3D work.
Mm.
Does it work?
I mean, visually, mm-hmm. as a kind of spectacle, I think it's pretty extraordinary. And I'm not sure that I was particularly down with what he was doing for Billy Lynn's Halftime Walk. I don't mm-hmm. think that particular story and that genre necessarily lent itself to this technology. I think this being a sort of sci-fi infused action film, big Hollywood A-lister in there, feels like it fits better.
Mm-hmm.
I would caveat this by saying that I don't think there's anywhere, certainly not in the UK, I'm not even sure within Europe, that has the capacity to project this film in the 4K 3D 120 frames
yeah.
per second rate. So we saw the film in the West End on the IMAX screen. From what I understand, the effect is essentially you're watching two separate 60 frame per second films, so there's like one in each eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a strange effect. I think actually though I got used to it quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's distracting initially, if only because seeing these massive movie stars' faces in such, you know, pin-sharp definition is distracting, because you look at someone like Clive Owen, you think this is not being kind to him. Will Smith looks great, actually. I mean, for his age and, mm-hmm. and obviously his kind of younger self. And I think the most impressive thing about this film is how seamless that the reverse aging job they've done on him.
We should point out it's not de-aging in the sense that we've seen in the Marvel movies with what they were doing to Samuel L. Jackson and Captain Marvel. This is a motion capture CGI creation.
Yeah.
So it's very strange going from what I think was really a top-class work in Captain Marvel and what we'll see in the Irishman as well, I'm sure, to what we got in Rogue One, I think, was the last time we saw this, where there was a digital human painted over a motion capture performance.
Yeah, so essentially Will Smith is giving a double performance mm-hmm. in this film. And I think that, yeah, you need that, I think. There's a lot mm-hmm. of scenes, obviously it being a kind of doppelganger movie where, you know, he's being pursued and hunted by his younger self.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really need to have that sense of the two actors or the two performances being kind of in one mm-hmm. in one space. It's one of his better performances I've seen, certainly in a while. I mean, he's been doing these kind of big concept sci-fi action films for quite a while mm-hmm. now, almost kind of exclusively, a few sprinkled in with a few fairly naff high concept romance and dramas. And yeah, this just feels like the kind of thing you want from Will Smith.
Yes, but he feels like that his natural charisma is sort of boxed in this one, right? Because he's playing an older, slightly over the hill assassin who's contemplating retirement.
I think that's the fascinating thing about this film is, you know, the doppelganger story works on one level. Mm-hmm. I think I don't think it really like delves into that theme too deeply, but I think looking at this kind of existential crisis that's sort of happening in Hollywood at the moment, and it's all around like image rights, mm-hmm. and we've seen it with you mentioned Star Wars, we've had like Peter Cushing and people
yeah.
like that being digitally exhumed. This is going to be something that, you know, increasingly we see more and more of. Actors now are having to actually, you know, almost like future proof. Will Smith giving this performance there's a slight strange kind of melancholy tinge to it, feeling like, well, why do we need Will Smith anymore? I mean, he's given the performance, and it's obviously this motion capture effect which has enabled it, but it feels like soon you're going to have this bank of actors' performances that are going to be, that, you know, people at a computer will be able to essentially make new work from. And yeah, as I say, I think it's this fascinating juncture in sort of the future of, well, not even the future, I mean, it's happening now. This is fascinating. Right now. Thing.
I think that the technology, for me, shows that really you can't recreate Will Smith. When Will Smith is playing Will Smith as his age now, there is so much more natural charisma, movements in his face, micro expressions that you can see that aren't there in the digitally created younger Will
Smith. So you weren't convinced by the younger.
Not fully, and there are certain shots where it was still very much in that uncanny valley. He didn't look like a real person walking around.
I was expecting it to feel more like that, and I think while I agree that, you know, you can't directly replace Will Smith as he is now, because, you know, you go into this knowing that that is him, that is what he looks like, this is the age that he is at, there is a slight, I guess it's like, yeah, it's hard to convince you that this younger version is a kind of living flesh and blood person. But I think that will gradually change, and we'll just get used to it. I
mean, maybe we will.
Within a few years, I can imagine this being much more common.
Maybe it's just a lot to take on at once. You have the 3D, high frame rate, high definition, plus doppelgangers. Darren, how did that play for you? Were you convinced by it all?
I think the thing that I was most unconvinced by was that the younger Will Smith was making jokes about the older Will Smith, as in current Will Smith looking a bit ropey. And that doesn't quite work when you've cast Will Smith in that role. My biggest problem with the film was that I think it took far too long to reach the premise. So anyone who's walked around in London, or probably anywhere else in the country over the last few weeks, will have seen these massive posters saying Will versus Will. Mm-hmm. We all know there's going to be two Will Smiths, one younger one, one current aged one. And it takes quite a long time to get to the point. And they even try and inject a little bit of mystery into that. You know, Will Smith isn't quite sure who is this sort of incredible assassin who can predict his every move. But we all know that. We don't need almost 45 minutes or something, I think it was, until it's finally, oh my word, I think they've cloned you. The thing I did enjoy about it was that they made absolutely no effort to attempt to explain the science behind it. They just said, yep, they've cloned you, and that was it. This is an action film. We're not going to go into any sci-fi elements. And I quite like that. It's a bit of a Stephen King trick, and it's just accept it. It's just magic, and that's fine. But yeah, my biggest problem was how long that took. And what I really wish had happened is that the film has been in gestation, I think, since 97, is it? I would love to have seen this film made in 1997 when they didn't have the technology to make this work at all, because I just think it would be one of those sort of legendarily sort of funny bad films.
I guess the way they would have had to have done it would have actually have the then aged Will Smith playing the younger,
age
him up with prosthetics or something.
Yeah,
but it probably wouldn't have worked as well.
No, I mean, it really did feel like watching Fresh Prince Will Smith. I did buy it. I did kind of suspend my disbelief with that, and it was exciting enough and fun enough, and it did feel like they were acting in a room together. You know, it wasn't like those sequences in Back to the Future 3 where they're shooting the back of the head when Michael J. Fox is playing another character. So there were aspects of it that I really enjoyed. I just wanted them to get there quicker. I was sat there thinking, okay, we'll have sort of 5 minutes at the start where we'll see that he's the best at what he does, which funnily enough, I mean, I mentioned The Equalizer 2 before, that is an almost identical opening sequence to that, because that is establishing, oh, this guy's an amazing killer, but here obviously he wasn't on the train, but it was still a train sequence where we were learning about our sort of iconic movie star and what he does. Yeah, mainly just really excited to see Benedict Wong.
Benedict Wong, who I love the fact that he's in this phase of his career now, post Doctor Strange, where he will just pop up in mainstream Hollywood movies.
Yeah, I mean, he will always be the 15 stories high guy to me. But seeing him, you know, now he's making these massive films on a quite regular basis and really relishing it. You know, he brought great comic relief to this thing.
He's playing the sort of supporting character that we see in a Mission Impossible film, as, you know, it's like the Ving Rhames role in a Mission Impossible. He'll just turn up and be a utility guy.
But he's so good that he's not just the comic relief and the kind of cheap gag guy. I think he's like the best supporting player in this film. Actually, just on a side note, he's also in The Personal History of David Copperfield.
He is indeed, yeah.
And he's doing a very convincing Lancashire accent. And I googled this and he's from...
He's born in Eccles.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. So, I mean, you mostly see him doing a kind of American, vague American accent. Amazing seeing him actually doing that.
Another reason why I like to see him flourish, because I think we were born in the same hospital a few years apart, but he's a local boy for me.
He was born very close to Marcus Rashford, I can tell you that.
But yeah, it's interesting you bring up the fact that this script has been on the shelf for 20-odd years. It does feel like a 90s sci-fi thriller that could have starred, maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme, maybe? Would this have been better then, or do you think that it still plays now?
I think it still plays. I mean, the Jerry Bruckheimer producer, super producer brand is still going strong, I think, this shows. I think we just don't get that many big action spectacle movies like this, which don't take themselves too seriously. I know what you're saying about, Darren, about it takes a little while for that plot mechanic to kick in, but I think once it does, it just delivers pretty straight action for like an hour or so.
Yeah. It is not boring in the slightest, and I think that is the one thing you would fear about a film like this. I was completely entertained.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely got a sense of authorship and style about it, which is quite unique, I think, quite distinctive. I mean, it's kind of weird coming out at this time of the year. It feels like, I know the blockbuster season seems to stretch on indefinitely now, but it does feel like perfect summer blockbuster fodder in the best sense. And I guess there's too much competition from the Marvel DC films, which are released every few months, but it definitely feels like it's doing something a bit more interesting, I think, than a lot of those films. And it's also not just a kind of schlocky, cheap, lazy, you know, action ride that we have been getting. And I mean, it's an original idea. Yeah. I mean, how often do we see a huge concept Hollywood movie with an A-lister that is not a reboot or a prequel or a sequel or something?
I'd caveat that. It's an original property. Maybe many of the themes and threads you see in this we have seen before.
But it's an original script.
Yeah, exactly.
And the script isn't by no means the strongest part of this film. And good to see Will Smith actually showing his muscle a little bit and actually getting a film like this made.
Yeah, I felt quite conflicted watching this film because, for me, Ang Lee is Sense and Sensibility, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Brokeback Mountain. He made these, you know, a very diverse body of dramatic work there, and he's done a Robert Zemeckis where he's thrown his career fully in, all his chips are in on this technology.
Well, the turning point was Life of Pi, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
First, where he fully embraces 3D, this type of filmmaking.
And there are sequences where it works. There's a motorbike chase and a motorbike fight sequence where a motorbike is used in ways that God never intended, that's quite thrilling with the high frame rate. But have we lost films that maybe Ang Lee could have made better in the older mould, do you think? Are you happy with where he's going?
I'm fairly happy. I mean, if this does well, and I'm not convinced it will do, but if this, you know, enables Ang Lee to go and make his next prestige drama, then, you know, good on him. I think I'd rather see him do something like this and then maybe take a break and come back with something like a Brokeback Mountain than make a Billy Lynn's Halftime War, which for me is kind of a hodgepodge between the two stools. I think it's just someone who had such promise and had made so many really great movies back to back, seems to have kind of slipped down this path, and it feels like it's going to be hard for him to kind of get back on that, you know, climb back into that saddle, but we'll see.
Well, let's put some scores on this. Adam, I'll come to you first. So, in anticipation, enjoyment, in retrospect?
I think maybe a 4 in anticipation because of Ang Lee and because of the presentation of the film. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a film in 3D. I mean, this is obviously, you know, necessitated by the frame rate in which it's shot, but it feels like that fad has sort of, you know, 10 years ago, it was like every blockbuster you saw was projected in 3D, and it was often the fairly shoddy, you know, it wasn't actually filmed in 3D, it was like applied later. But yeah, I'd say possibly a 4-3 in enjoyment and probably a 3 in retrospect. I like what Will Smith's doing here. Any film in which a character uses a motorbike as a fist is good for me.
Darren?
I think I would say 2 in anticipation. What I'd read was that it wasn't great, and the idea, I think a little like you were saying, of Ang Lee directing a sort of Will Smith big action film, it feels like a bit of a shame to me. I still think of Ang Lee the way you talk about him kind of 15 years ago, Ang Lee. Then sitting there throughout, I was entertained by it, so I'd give it 3. And then I'm sort of hovering between 2 and 3 for in retrospect, and I'll probably go for 3, and it might be bumped up from the two purely because of Will Smith's answer on the red carpet the other day when he was asked, I don't know if you saw this, he was asked if he could go back, you know, his younger self, was there anything he would change? And he said he would go back to the set of Wild Wild West and say to his younger self, why the hell didn't you take The Matrix?
Terrific. I think I might agree there. I'd say 3-3-2 for this. Quite ironically, this is almost the perfect Friday Night at Home film, but then you can't create the perfect projection and 3D settings at home. So
I can't imagine watching this on an iPhone or on a plane. Or
I know, but it's like a nice throwback at a pizza inn. I don't know. The technology doesn't quite convince me, but it's nice to see Will Smith trying. And speaking of young Will Smith, we'll be getting back to him later with Film Club. But first, we're going to have The Day Shall Come. Based on 100 true stories, this new film from Chris Morris exposes a dark farce at the heart of Homeland Security. Newcomer Marshawn Davis stars as a preacher, leading his own small-scale revolution in Miami. He becomes the unlikely target and beneficiary of the FBI's anti-terror activities.
Could you walk him across the line?
Of course.
If we give him a fake bomb and the guy tries to use it, we have the next Bin Laden.
My mission is to change the lives of poor people without the gun weapon.
Let's offer some funds. Some automatic weapons?
Activating recording.
Perhaps your army needs weapons?
No.
We don't believe in guns.
And if necessary, we'll call on the dinosaurs.
We believe that at the sound of a trumpet,
they will come to our aid.
A clip from The Day Shall Come there. So, Darren, I'll come to you first. I had a strange experience the other day where I had to explain to a young colleague who Chris Morris was. And I guess it's been 9 years since Four Lions. It's been longer than that, 10, 15 years and more since The Day Today and Brass Eye. Should we be excited for a new Chris Morris joint?
I think we should. I think Chris Morris is certainly, for me, one of the most significant satirists maybe this country's ever produced, and certainly of the last 25 years. I actually think that leading up to this film, I'm not sure there's even been a misfire. I mean, The Day Today, Brass Eye, Four Lions, Jam, all of it. I really am a massive fan of his work. I see him as the kind of Swift of his day, and he seems to take his time over what projects he's going to do. And like you say, it's been 9 years since Four Lions, which I thought was a really excellent debut feature film. And yeah, I was very excited to see this.
And did it work for you? Did it pay off?
I'm afraid I think this is the first misfire of the man's career. I was very disappointed by this. As you alluded to before, he said that, you know, this is based on 100 true stories. Well, why the hell did we get this one? It's written by Jesse Armstrong, who, you know, co-created Peep Show and wrote Fresh Meat and is currently doing Succession, which I think is the best thing currently on TV. It's directed by Morris, expectation through the roof. And it felt to me a little like an overly long, dull episode of Veep, which both of them have worked on. Chris Morris has been directing a few in recent years. Armstrong's written a fair few. It almost felt like a retread to me of Four Lions. You know, it even had four kind of ineffectual terrorists. They weren't at the heart of it in the same way. There are some decent moments in it, but I was very, very surprised that he's chosen to make this. And he's been doing the rounds recently, promoting the film, which he did 9 years ago. And he's usually seen as this kind of dark prince who very, very rarely ventures and is interviewed. And then he is interviewed and he's a regular guy and he's really interesting about his work. And seeing him on Channel 4 talk about this film and talk about satire and the importance of satire, I mean, that, whatever it was, 20-minute interview, I just wished he'd made that film. I was watching that. I watched it before the film and then I watched it again afterwards. And I can't believe he's talking about the film that I saw. And actually, I would just urge people, seek that out. You know, find his media appearances recently because he is absolutely fascinating. I'm just not sure he made the film that he's talking about.
And where does it go wrong for you then? Can you pinpoint that quality?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, above anything else, it isn't very funny. I mean, I was sat in a packed screening room. It wasn't really getting big laughs. You know, it has that kind of Veep thick of it thing where there's a few zingers chucked out between characters who all kind of despise each other, and they have this endless supply in the same way that, you know, they had in Blackadder, and then they have it in The Thick of It, where they will always be handy with a zinger. But actually, there wasn't much more to the humour than that. And I expect Morris, to me, is kind of like a Radiohead-like figure. He had quite a similar background to them. And I feel like every single project he's worked on up to this point, there's been a very clear progression. You look at the day-to-day, then Brass Eye, then Jam, then Four Lions. He's done something completely different every time. And then he's made this, which it's impossible to argue this isn't in the same wheelhouse as Four Lions. It's not an identical film by any means. And it also feels a little like, you know, I discussed it with Adam the other day, so I'll let him discuss this, but it does feel a little out of date, which is not something I expect to associate with the work of Chris Morris.
Interesting. One thing that comes up in many of those interviews, particularly the one with Jon Snow, is that can we do satire today because the pace of politics and current affairs is so fast? By the time you've written the joke, it's already been out. The absurdity is ratcheted up to another level by those in power.
Well, weirdly enough, I was reading on the way in, I'm reading a book by, is it Tony Lynn, I think, who wrote for Yes Minister. Well, he wrote a book about comedy rules. And one of the things he says is that when they wrote it, they wrote the scripts a year in advance. Then they went out and everyone said, oh my God, it's up to the minute. And he said, because the thing is, if you pick up a paper from 30 years ago, it's about the same issues. If you pick one up from 50 years ago, it's about the same issues. And I think Morris has always been really, really good at that. If you look at the day-to-day, you know, if you were to take an average episode of Have I Got News For You from 1994, it wouldn't work at all. But I think if you watch the day-to-day, it's a satire of what the news is and the way it's presented. And that's what I think is his greatest strength. So I don't think where we're at, you know, this is what he was pushed on Channel 4. They were trying to get, you know, with Brexit and with Trump and everything else, can you even do satire? But of course you can, but he usually does it better than this, I think.
Adam, what's your take on Today's Shall Come?
Well, I saw this film quite a few months ago now at the Fairly Cozy Distributors in-house screening, and surprisingly, Morris actually turned up to give, I think, what I presume would just be a kind of short intro, and he proceeded to sort of speak for about 10 minutes about the backstory that kind of led him on this journey to making this film. And yeah, that 10-minute intro was more interesting than the preceding, you know, 90 minutes of the actual film. And unfortunately, and you know, I just wish, as Darren says, I wish he'd kind of made the film that I think he thinks he's made, I suppose. It's a tough one because I wonder how much he was actually like hamstrung by, you know, there's so much goes on behind the scenes, I'm sure, with like financiers, and it feels like a film he's probably been trying to get made for quite a long time. I mean, the actual incident which sparked this that he's kind of honed in on, I think happened in the sort of mid-noughties. It feels like it's maybe been pulled from that era slightly in the way it's styled, and even some of the jokes. I think you can definitely pick out the stuff that Armstrong has written in terms of the punchlines. And Morris, you know, you want to hear from him more directly. As a director, I don't think he's got that sense of like, yeah, that sense of style or authorship quite nailed down. Frankly, I think this could have been directed by anyone. And so when you actually, you know, listen to Morris on the TV or radio or whatever, and he's just kind of talking, and you go kind of direct to source, he's endlessly interesting and fascinating and just so, you know, so on it with his knowledge and insight into all this stuff. And I think the prospect of him coming back with some new material in any form, you know, is very exciting. People have welcomed him with open arms. It's like been too long. And maybe there's a sense of like, this isn't what people wanted from him. You know, he's making a film, unlike Four Lions, which felt very timely and felt, you know, very close to kind of home, in literally, with the sort of narrative that's focused on here. I'm not sure how invested I was really with the story of this US Homeland Security project, as he calls it. There's just a little bit of a disconnect for me between Morris, the satirist that we know and love, and the director who's churning out stuff like this. And actually, to compare him to a contemporary of his, Armando Iannucci, who has made very sharp satire film work, and something like The Death of Stalin, which was, okay, a little bit of a sort of alien territory for him perhaps, but it's just, he's brought his own style and he's put his own stamp on it. And I think it's very telling that he's now going off and making something like David Copperfield, which is a bit of a move in a different direction for him, but I just think works so well and shows how much he's developed and grown as a filmmaker and a storyteller. And it feels like Morris is still stuck in this single mode. Mm-hmm. Similar to Darren, I was a little bit disappointed simply because my expectations, I think, were just so high.
I thought that the characters were so thinly drawn. That was probably the biggest issue for me. Is I remember when Four Lions came out, and I was very surprised to hear him referencing things like Dad's Army and stuff like that. He was trying to say, you know, this is like a classic kind of sitcom idea. We got these characters together and you care about them even though they're stupid and make mistakes. And here, I didn't care about anyone in this film, which, you know, is a major, major problem, because we were supposed to sort of empathise with the characters, and the end was supposed to feel like something, and it just didn't for me.
Well, you've got, essentially, you've got these two sides. So you have the FBI agents with Dennis O'Hare and Anna Kendrick, and they're obviously not the good guys. But then the so-called terrorist, the sort of Miami preacher and his tribe, they're very... I mean, he's not punching down, I don't think, Morris. But at the same time, you don't really... I never felt like I cared about those characters or was invested in what they were doing. They come across as very deluded and almost quite kind of simple. And I feel like he's just got that wrong a little bit in terms of how to actually engage an audience with a subject through... Well, telling that story through someone's perspective that you can actually relate to in some way. I just felt so removed and distant from me.
Well, I suppose a lot of people are excited about this film because it is the return of this great satirist, and has that mantle been moved elsewhere? Is it on television, Darren? Is it Succession? Has Jesse Armstrong usurped?
I don't know about satire in terms of Succession, and I'm not sure there is an obvious kind of successor to Chris Morris. For me, and this is probably quite a cynical point of view, but Morris, he did a radio show early in his career with Peter Cook, who'd probably be like my number one satirist and comedian. And that is a masterpiece called Why Bother? And Peter Cook said, when he was opening his establishment club in Soho in the 60s or 70s, he likened it to the sort of cabaret bars in Berlin that did so much to stop the rise of the Nazis and the Second World War breaking out. And Peter Cook basically felt satire was pointless. It was redundant. It didn't do anything. And I pretty much agree with that. This film didn't really have any satirical bite anyway, but Four Lions did, I think, and Brass Eye certainly did, but I'm not sure they ever actually impact any change. I'm with Cook on that. So I'm not too worried whether we had a great satirist around or not. I just wish it had made me laugh more.
Right. What scores would you give this, Darren?
4 going in. Yeah, huge fan, really excited. I would then say it was probably a 3 while I was watching it. You know, it is not without funny lines or good set pieces at times, and there are some decent performances in it. And actually, in retrospect, I'd go 2, which I would have thought was unthinkable for something that Morris had done. You know, I was so excited to see that he was making a new film, and I just can't believe it's this one.
Adam?
I think I'm trying to remember my own scores on my review for a little while, but I think I gave it a 5 in anticipation, and then 3 and 3 for enjoyment in retrospect. It passes the time. I mean, it's fine. On a lot of technical levels, you can't really complain, but I think just at its core, there's just not enough of a compelling narrative, and it's, yeah, as Darren says, it's not laugh out loud funny enough to really elevate it above those scores.
Right, so there you have it. New releases this week, Gemini Man and The Day Shall Come. Up next, we have Film Club. We're going back to Will Smith for his first major film role, 6 Degrees of Separation.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Based on the Tony Award-nominated stage play, Six Degrees of Separation stars Stockard Channing and Donald Sutherland as conceited Manhattan art dealers taken in by a con. A young man, played by Will Smith, appears on their doorstep saying he's a friend of their children and the son of Hollywood legend Sidney Poitier. But who is he, really? Let's hear a clip.
Well, a substitute teacher out on Long Island was dropped from his job for fighting with a student. A few weeks later, he returned to the classroom, shot the student unsuccessfully, held the class hostage, and then shot himself successfully. This fact caught my eye. Last sentence, Times. A neighbor described the teacher as a nice boy, always reading Catcher in the Rye. This nitwit Chapman, who shot John Lennon, said he did it because he wanted to draw the attention of the world to Catcher in the Rye, and the reading of this book would be his defense. Young Hinckley, the whiz kid who shot Reagan and his press secretary, said, if you want my defense, all you have to do is read Catcher in the Rye.
A clip from Six Degrees of Separation there. I think almost before we talk about this, we've got to talk about the elephant in the room. This film predicted Hollywood, right? So part of the con that Will Smith's character enacts on these high-class New York types is that his father is creating a film version of Cats.
Oh, God, yes. The running joke, which is established very early in this, is, and it is hilarious watching it today, how could they ever make a movie out of Cats?
How would you do it? Why would you do it?
Why would you do it? Everyone is in agreement that it's just a bad idea.
Everyone is in agreement, including Sir Ian McKellen, who is in the room, who is going to be in Cats.
But also during that long monologue that Will Smith gives, when he talks about what passes for imagination these days, he says, Lord of the Rings, and off camera looks at Ian McKellen. Mm. He also mentions Star Wars and Star Trek. And then later in the film, J.J. Abrams is in it.
Yeah. Oh, no. I thought that was Justin Theroux. Is it J.J. Abrams?
It's J.J. Abrams. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, they do kind of look similar. Oh, that he's very bad in this. I'm glad he didn't really act much beyond this.
Was this a first watch for you guys? Darren, had you seen this before?
I'd seen it before. Mm-hmm. My wife is quite a big fan of this film, so she showed it to me a few years ago. So, yeah, this was a second watch. It's a strange film. It's one of those films where it's quite arch and theatrical. You mm-hmm. could watch it without knowing it was a stage play and immediately recognise the fact that this has been adapted from a play. It has a kind of framing device where you have the sort of central characters telling the story of what's happened to them, which you see on stage constantly, and then it sort of cuts back and forth between them telling the story and you actually seeing what happened.
I've only seen this before as a stage play in the Royal Exchange in Manchester years ago, and I'd heard that this was almost the film that people forget that Will Smith was in before Men in Black and that amazing run he had in the mid-90s. I think he's pretty good here. He's clearly figuring out his on-screen persona, right, Adam?
I think this is his best performance.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, you know, given his age and relative greenness in terms of being a lead actor, there's no rawness about his performance. Mm-hmm. And he's playing against type a little bit. This isn't just kind of Fresh Prince in, you know, in Manhattan. He's obviously working out this on-screen persona still. And there are times when he does slip a little bit into Fresh Prince territory. But I think what he's doing, playing this kind of, yeah, this con artist with a double life or sort of hidden identity that we never really fully discover, which I think is one of the fascinating things about this film, is this question of, like, who is he? I mean, it's never really resolved.
No.
He just is dropped into this film as the complete star package for me. I mean, he's acting alongside Donald Sutherland and Ian McKellen, and he's in the film for quite a bit of it, but he completely steals the show for me. I think this is, like, for a young actor coming through, I can't think of another performance with quite the same impact. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, this is the first time I'd seen the film. I'm not sure what the response was at the time.
Well, the focus was completely on Stockard Channing, who had pioneered that performance on and off Broadway.
Yeah.
And didn't win the Tony Award, but was nominated for an Oscar for that performance. So I think it was very much the two white leads that had the focus.
And I think actually, to be fair, everyone is really good in this. Yeah. But apart watching from
Ian McKellen's accent is a bit odd.
Yeah, until they say, "Oh, he's South African," I had no idea what he was supposed to be. But yeah, I think Will Smith in this. I mean, I think his performance has probably aged the best. Mm-hmm. And when you watch it now, knowing everything that he's kind of done since, and also, you know, okay, he had that amazing run in the 90s and early noughties when he became known, self-appointed nickname of Mr. Box Office, which is one of my favourite anecdotes about any Hollywood A-lister. But, you know, it feels like that was a long time ago, and to see him even predating that doing something, you know, this big and commanding and assured, it's just really quite, yeah, I was quite exhilarated watching this, actually.
Yeah,
I mean, I did think that Stockard Channing was also sensational. I think that performance has also aged well, and I think it's interesting because I think probably, you know, hopefully it won't be for a while, but I suspect the first lines of her obituary will be about Greece and about the West Wing, and here is a performance that's right in the middle of those two, almost smack bang in the middle, and I think it's like a very sad performance, and she's really, really good and has a lot to do in it. Yeah, it holds up well, I think.
We spoke about political satire with The Day Shall Come. This is much more a social satire. And all of the contemporary reviews talk about how lacerating it is to a certain class of, you know, Manhattan social society.
I mean, maybe that was intended. Mm-hmm. I wonder if at the time that would have come through as much. Perhaps it's more embedded in the play. Mm-hmm. I suspect that may have been lost on a lot of people at the time viewing this. But really? Now it definitely has taken on that. And actually, I think what it's doing works on so many levels. And just the emotion of the storytelling, I think it doesn't really hit home until almost like the last scene of the film. But when it does, it's suddenly like a train. You just, yeah, I was totally left dumbfounded by the ending.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I thought it's quite entertaining that, you know, the central to the kind of lie that we assume that Smith's character is telling is that he is supposedly the son of Sidney Poitier, which is the absolute perfect choice to get into these sort of, you know, well-meaning rich white people's lives.
Yeah.
And apparently when Poitier first met Will Smith, said, "Well, you're certainly handsome enough to be handsome."
Brilliant. It made me think of Get Out, actually, that whole scene.
Yes.
Like the line of, "I would have voted for Obama a third time."
Yeah.
It seems like Sidney Poitier played that role in a certain white society there. There's a respectable face for certain urbanites. Mm. So this film, quite late in the story, sets up this gay subplot, and it has this fascinating shot where it's a kiss, but it's not a kiss. And yeah, you always put scare quotes around it, Adam.
I put scare quotes. It's a bit of a backstory to this, is that it was scripted that they were going to kiss. So it's Will Smith and Anthony Michael Hall, I think one of his kind of early performances as well. Will Smith, apparently pretty close to actually the day they were going to shoot the scene, had decided, I think he'd consulted with Denzel Washington or someone, who'd said, "At this stage in your career, if you do a gay kiss on screen, it's going to damage your brand or your image." And Will Smith has since said he actually really regrets not going through with it. And I think it is one of the few really obvious down points and negatives of the film. It does feel like there should be that moment of connection that you just don't get because of the way it's fudged slightly with the kind of camera work. It's a real shame that it wasn't actually filmed as it was intended, because I think you do lose something from the character.
Yeah. So, Adam, you said that you think this is Will Smith at his best. Darren, would you agree, or do you think that he would go on to better things, do different things?
I think that Will Smith is such a sort of extraordinary movie star more than anything else. He's one of these people where there's such a persona that it's almost not about the films. Mm. It's like, I think there was possibly once, even on this podcast, a discussion about Jeff Goldblum.
Right.
And there was sort of this, you know, belief that he hasn't actually done all that many great films. I would say The Fly is a great film. Mm. But I think, possibly, I mean, to bring Goldblum into it, I think Independence Day is probably the peak of Smith's powers. That, right, for me, would be, I think, the best film he's ever done and his best performance.
I think if we're talking blockbuster, that and First Men in Black film. And the second one is, people don't really like it as much, but I think that's got some good... certainly his performance is good in it. I don't think he reached these peaks again dramatically. Possibly Ali is very good and very underrated, I think.
Now you mentioned that, this is the third Will Smith film club, because we did Ali and we did Men in Black.
I've probably done another one somewhere. But, you know, he's tried to make similar films to Six Degrees of Separation again, and they've turned out to be things like 7 Pounds and
Bag of Vance.
Yes. Is he in that Winter's Tale or New York Winter's Tale?
Are you thinking of...
Oh, no, what am I thinking of?
Oh, wait.
He's in another...
Collateral Beauty?
Oh, possibly that. But he's in another really bad kind of New York movie that's set around Christmas. And,
I think if we have to do another Will Smith film club, can we do Hancock? I'd quite like to revisit that.
No.
You're vetoing it on air.
Hancock is very bad. Hancock is like, I mean, it's like similar to Joker in the sense that it's supposed to be this radical superhero origin movie that just goes nowhere. I mean, it's like the stupidest film ever.
What would you do if we had to do another film club, Will Smith? Would it have to be Wild Wild West?
Yeah, I've seen Wild Wild West quite a few times. I think it was one of those films that was always shown repeats late night on, you know, television or something. But I'm not sure there's much mileage in that, is there? It's a bit, that's not aged well. We've done the original Men in Black. Or we did Independence Day, possibly.
Have we done Independence Day? We've done Men in Black, definitely.
Well, I think if listeners want to send us some Smith recommendations.
Top five Will Smith films, maybe.
I'd love to hear it. I'd be fascinated to hear, because you think of the obvious Mr. Box Office ones, and maybe not so much the Bag of Vances and the Alleys, but I think there's a few gems maybe, you know, sprinkled in there.
So my blind spot for Will Smith is I've never seen Bad Boys.
Oh, how have we forgotten Bad Boys? Of course they're doing Dad Boys.
Dad Boys for life.
Yeah.
Well, if you do watch 6 Degrees of Separation, listeners, let us know what you think at Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, via email, or at lwis.com/podcast. So, next week, talking of sequels, Adam, we have Zombieland 2 Double Tap. Any excitement for that?
I mean, it's coming out, and I've not seen any advertised marketing for it. There's been no press screenings, to my knowledge, yet.
I just imagine it's been tough to get the billboards, really.
Thinking of what's come out over the last few weeks. Yeah, there's a lot of billboard hogging going on, especially around the LFF. But yeah, maybe not the best sign that it's sort of 10 years after the first one came out, and there's been very little fanfare or anything really.
What I find fascinating about the marketing for that film is that it's from the same creative team, same writers, same directors, but they've since gone on and done other things. So it's billed as from the people who brought you Deadpool.
Yes.
Please come and see our movie.
Yeah.
And then for the other new release and film club, we have an Olivier Assayas double bill. We have his new film Nonfiction and his 1996 classic Irma Vep, which I haven't seen. I'm a bit of an Assayas newbie.
It's one of his really good early ones. Nonfiction I watched on a plane recently. Couldn't believe it was on there. You know, pre-release. Don't know how they got hold of it.
I remember Nonfiction causing quite a bit of confusion. Was it at Venice or Cannes?
It was at Venice, yeah.
Where it was just listed as Nonfiction and people thought it was a documentary.
I did that. I think I was the one making notes in the programme and you said, no, that's an actual film. So,
It's an actual film and we will actually discuss it next week. But Adam, Darren, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about new releases and 6 Degrees of Separation. I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.